One Sunday morning in college, I got up well before my roommates. I quietly got ready, and then I trekked across the entirely empty campus. It was a crisp fall morning in New Hampshire, the frost already on the ground, even as bright red and orange leaves still hung in the trees. I was sleepy, and I was also giddy. Bishop Gene Robinson was visiting St. Thomas that morning, and I was thrilled. Gene had just recently been elected and consecrated as our bishop in New Hampshire, causing a mixed experience. He was well loved in New Hampshire. He had been a leader in the church there in that diocese for many years. He was funny and down to earth. He'd come to help make lasagna with us college kids in the week before his consecration. And his becoming a bishop was a really, really big deal on an international scale. Some of you know this, because he was the first openly gay and partnered bishop. Many people were elated. Some were angry. And he was leading us through all that. He stepped up into the old, ornate pulpit, and almost as soon as he began speaking, I wished that maybe he hadn't come that day after all. He was speaking about money and what we, the ones sitting in the pews, were going to do with it. Whatever you planned to pledge when you arrived here this morning, he said, then pausing long enough that we began to wriggle, I want you to think about stretching that number. I want you to think about reaching further, he said, reaching until you start to feel uncomfortable. I felt pretty uncomfortable. Just hearing the suggestion, I began to intently study the rack of hymnals on the back of the pew in front of me. It was not very interesting, but it was safe. I was desperate not to make eye contact with anyone. I wasn't sure what might happen if I did make eye contact with someone, but I didn't want to find out. It seemed like a bad idea. What I had planned to give was, honestly, a token gift. It was a way of saying that I was there and part of the community, and it was small enough that I wouldn't really feel it. The pledge I had planned to make felt entirely doable. Gene was suggesting that if that was the case, it probably wasn't enough. The parable we receive today is a rather comical one for this, the Sunday on which we hold our ingathering of pledges. And I should mention that I don't get to pick the readings that we have week by week. Maybe this is obvious. Maybe you could have guessed as much. Instead, we have a calendar of readings shared by billions of Christians, all hearing the same stories each Sunday. And this is what we get today. We get a haughty, prideful Pharisee gloating about how great it is that he tithes. And I'd be inclined to agree with him. Tithing is wonderful. And he is totally missing the point. And then we have a tax collector. Someone who has gone wildly astray in his life, swindling and extorting his neighbors, making them suffer, all to be able to line his own pockets by siding with the empire. If I'm honest, it turns my stomach a bit to imagine him coming into the temple all but reeking of that callous greed, and then having the gall to ask God for mercy. I mean, how dare he? Except that, of course, this is exactly what he should do, what we all would do well to do. Even as much as he has messed up, he gets this piece right. But the parable is not as straightforward as that. They never are. Parables, these strange stories that throw two unlikely things alongside one another. They do not sift out into simple checklists. Don't be like the Pharisee. Do be like the tax collector. One biblical scholar suggests that the two disparate things being thrown alongside each other in this parable are the inner world and the outer world, or what happens in our hearts and then the action we take out in the world. By and large, the Pharisee is getting the outer actions right. He's praying, he's giving to the temple, he's living out his faith by fasting. Presumably, he keeps other similar practices, but his heart is a mess. He's arrogant. He is sure that he's better than everyone else. He stands off by himself, and he is glad to be separated from the rest of the community. The tax collector, on the other hand, gets the heart piece right. He knows he needs to ask for God's mercy. But his actions have been aligned with evil. And we don't hear any indication that he plans to change professions. Each person lacks what the other has. They both need each other, though they can hardly see it in the moment. But I hope that as the story keeps unfolding beyond these verses, that maybe they find each other. Jesus finishes the parable by saying that the tax collector went down to his home justified rather than the Pharisee. But as is too often the case, the translation here is off. Instead of rather, the Greek word here could also be translated as alongside, which is actually a much more common use of it. As in, the tax collector went down to his home justified alongside the Pharisee. One person doesn't win out over the other. They are both in need, and they both have something to teach. They both have ways to lead the other into humility. And that's the funny place where Jesus concludes this teaching, with a riddle about how we are humbled. Perhaps then, I think definitely now, humility has kind of a complicated reputation. Some people seek it at all costs, making fun of themselves or trying to pass credit on to someone else. Others like to appear humble, while also helping the world see how great they are. I think the kids talk about this as being the humble brag. I think both miss the point, though, and they're not what Jesus is talking about. Theologian David Lowes suggests that humility is not about purposefully feeling terrible about ourselves. It's not about being self-deprecating or trying to suffer for the sake of suffering. Instead, he teaches, humility is about recognizing our need. The Pharisee misses that he too has needs, that he cannot do it all on his own. The tax collector, though, he knows that he's in way over his head, that he needs help. Sitting there in that well-worn pew in St. Thomas, I thought about my work-study job, at which I made minimum wage, which was quite part-time. I thought about how expensive my books were and the cost of plane tickets home for breaks and the price tag on produce in New Hampshire, where the only local thing you can get for months of the year are parsnips and wrinkly apples. Nothing really grows there. I also heard Bishop Jean's guidance echoing through my ears, that if we were quite comfortable with what we were giving, it probably wasn't enough. I felt a lump in my throat as I crumpled up the pledge card I had already filled out and reached for a fresh one. Plenty of fear swirled, and I decided to try leaping anyway. By pledging more than I fully knew how I would pull off that year, I had the experience of being humbled in the way that Jesus points to in today's gospel. I knew I would need help to live it out. Help to find extra money to give away, yes. But maybe more importantly, help to discern what I would do without or what needs might be met in more creative ways. More than anything, I knew I needed help to trust that if I stretched to be more generous, somehow it would all still work. Friends, I am not suggesting that pledging should hurt or that people should suffer in order to be generous. Recommending punishing spiritual practices has no place in the church. And I also don't think that's what Jean was suggesting. Instead, on that uncomfortable Sunday, he gave me at least two gifts that continue to make my life richer. First, he helped me to see my need, to recognize that I cannot do any of this on my own. And second, he helped me to see that more is possible than we often imagine at first. There is more grace, more mercy, more togetherness, more generosity than we could ever believe when we are just beginning and still looking at the horizon. God is offering us more of all that goodness than we can imagine. And she's also inviting more from us than we may think is really feasible just yet. The good news is that we do not figure this out alone. In fact, we cannot figure this out alone. Instead, we ask for help and we learn how to live this out together. We're sent out alongside one another, blessed with companions on the way, carrying the promise that if we stretch together, God will help us to make it all possible.